Hello and welcome to the first 2021 playoff edition of the True Blue LA podcast. You know, Eric, I'm happy we got to record one.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't the season's over podcast. So, yeah, there's Dodgers are still alive. They have at least one home game at Dodger Stadium. And if it's anything like last night, it'll kill us all because it is exciting. And, yeah, it's a lot of stuff going on.
We'll break down that really incredible game. We'll look ahead to the NLDS against some team up north. We actually have a Dodgers rewind. I wasn't expecting one. Kind of a last minute thing. Didn't know till the ninth inning if we'd be recording it, but Eric, you're a prepared man and you're ready to go.
We didn't have notes last time. I figured I need to step up and we were recording a tad later in the day Thursday. That helped because I think I would have been a zombie otherwise
no
this morning.
Kidding.
So yeah, but I figured we didn't get a rewind last on Monday, so we're doing a rewind today.
I'm looking forward to it. It's a secret one. I don't know why it's a secret, but I get to find out all of that after this. So we should talk about last night, I guess. So when you leave the stadium, when you're covering a game like that, are you there long enough that leaving parking's not a thing? You're good
yes,
to go?
Yes.
That's a little silver lining there.
Yeah. And like, I guess during the regular season, there might be some days where it's rare, but like, let's say I finish everything I wanted to write or maybe planning ahead, just whatever. Like I'm done at a certain time. Even on those days, like where it's super, like relatively early after the game, you can from the press box you can kind of see part of the parking lot, like where some people are exiting. And the general rule is if you could still see a bunch of brake lights there, you better just wait a little bit longer. But yeah. Like it rarely gets to that. By the time I'm usually done, it takes a lot longer, and then everything's pretty much cleared out by the time I'm out of there.
So. That has to be I'm sure it's not to you anymore, but for a while, a surreal thing. That's not how Dodger Stadium works.
It's surreal. Like, well, cause you know, like I walk in, I'm also generally, I think I'm on the early side in terms of like showing up. I'm usually like one of the first people in the press box, at least like reporter wise. And, playoffs are a little more regimented. So, It doesn't. There's not a lot to do unless
are
I
you
have
in
to
the
like write something.
The real press box.
I was for the wild card game. I might be for the division series. I'm not really expecting it. Usually, the deeper the run, I usually end up in the dining room, which is right behind the press box, which has you can't really see the field except for maybe one or two seats in there. But we have all the TVs and depending on the day, like, if it was the 2017 World Series, game one, if it's super hot, that is like a super air conditioned room. So
oh,
it's like,
nice.
It's pretty good, but yeah, it's generally fine. You know, obviously you'd prefer to not be watching on TV while you're there, but you still get a lot of the atmosphere.
And I think that's important, especially for a game like yesterday, where off the bat, it just didn't have that excitement. It was the nervous energy, the Matt, not quite the Matt Stairs energy, but that same kind of, not dead, but like tepid.
So I was having this conversation. I was actually talking to Dieter Ruhl, the Dodgers organist. He's excellent. This was like maybe a half hour before the game. Maybe a little more than that, almost an hour. And we were just catching up and talking, and we were like, yeah, I think I used that exact phrase, like, man, there's a lot of nervous energy here. Like, it's this was before the game, you know? Like, it's the first game playoff game back with fans since the 2019 NLDS. It's winner take all, which is against a team they're objectively better than.
But a team that ended the season very hot, a team that historically the Dodgers have had many, many bad memories against.
Yeah, and so it was like, you know, I think a lot of the thing about, like, people were worried about the wild card game is because literally, like, anything could happen in one game. And it kind of played out that way. Like, for most of the game, it was just like the offense was kind of struggling. But then Scherzer struggled, but he sort of pitched out of it a little bit. But then it became like a bullpen game, like probably like sooner than the Dodgers expected.
Cardinals kept making great play after lucky play after great play.
Well, it was also amazing because so their defense is so good. Like Tommy Edman made a couple ridiculous plays at second. Edmundo Sosa even made a couple plays at short, but the two Mookie Betts hits that were like the only two hits for a while for the Dodgers were right off Edmundo Sosa's glove at shortstop. But then, like, their outfield is so ridiculous. Like, it was a slog to try to get anything going. But then, like, you know, and then to harken back to the NLDS from 2019, Joe it's Kelly
never harken first back to that.
Yeah, first reliever out of the pen, like in like the toughest spot of the game. Scherzer left with two on and one out in the fifth.
Not even finishing the fifth. Pronounced episode at the mound. It was cute.
Yeah, it's like I think you could almost no matter the situation, Max Scherzer is going to be mad that he's taken out of the game. Like even if he's like he gave up eight runs without recording an out or something, he'd be like, "What? Come on!" Like you know. But so it was kind of that. But it was like you know, it was more. It wasn't like, oh my god, this is irreparable damage. It's more like, oh, that's just Max Scherzer. Like,
yep, no, even, totally.
Before the start, this was the day before, because you always get the next day's starter like the day before, and someone asked Scherzer like, because Trey Turner, I think on Sunday said, yeah, Max is already angry about like what he's already like getting ready for Wednesday, you know, and. Someone asked him about that. He's like, are you kind of that way? And he's like, and he like hesitated for a bit. He goes, yeah, you know, he's just like, he's like, yeah, that's kind of how I am, you know, like, but it's really funny. But yeah, so like at that point, like, Scherzer, he had like the fifth lowest walk rate in the majors this year. He had walked like 8 in 11 starts with the Dodgers in the regular season. He walked 3 yesterday and he hit a guy on 3-2. He had 7 full counts in his 21 batters. So he was a little bit off. He did, like I said, did pitch through it. It was still only 1-1 at the time. But I think that was pretty clearly the time to pull him. Like, I think you could even make an argument he might have possibly should have been pulled sooner than that. But, like, I get it, right? Like, it was – he's at 94 pitches. Not that you're necessarily always monitoring pitch count, like, religiously like that. But it was –
I also think it's a thing where, and Scherzer even alluded to this in his post-game interview, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point, which was ridiculous.
The shirtless one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he alluded to, he's like, you know, in the playoffs, this front office and Dave, they matchups. Like, they care so much about what pitcher is individually good against this run of hitters. And I'm sure that, you know, he got to face a couple of batters the third time through. They just said against, you know, Edmonds and Goldschmidt, we like Scherzer. But when it comes to Arenado, even historically, if it makes sense that Scherzer had good numbers against Arenado, they wanted Joe Kelly in there. And that's what they won. That was their plan, and they stuck to it.
Yep, and it worked. Yep. I was talking to another writer who I was catching up with. This was, I think, Tuesday. And he goes... what did he say? He's like, he just said Joe Kelly, huh? Like that was all he said. And I said, yeah, he's kind of in that like circle of trust now. I said, I think before this, I said, I think he's at worst like the fourth choice right now out of the bullpen. And like you got Kenley and Trinan. And then it's like a toss up, right? It's like you have that Knebel, Kelly, and then Vessia if it's a lefty. I think Bickford's like a step below maybe that, just based on recent stuff. But
and certainly how they deployed in the playoffs, deployed yesterday. Right.
Yeah, so like, yeah, and it was just funny. Like, and immediately right away, the first reliever they go to is Kelly in the big spot. But then also like Bruiser Gratterall, like,
that even surprised me more than Kelly, to be honest. For,
no question. Like when even when he's going right, he still doesn't miss bats. He's still like work in progress. He's got amazing stuff, obviously, but he was terrible like the last week or two of the season, and it was and then they go to him in the sixth of a 1-1 game, admittedly bottom of the order, so if you're going to go to him, that's the time, right? So, and the fact that Scherzer left early kind of put them in a spot where they kind of had to do that. Like, they only we'll get to this in a second, but they only carried 10 pitchers. It's a one game thing, so like the roster, I really like how they deployed the roster. Like, I was looking at this, they only used 10 pitchers in a game three times all year. They used 11 once. That was a planned bullpen game with actual like one inning relievers, and that only because it went 11 innings, right?
So. I don't necessarily disagree with you. My two sort of counter arguments would be, when this game looked like it might have been headed in the extras, I was like, uh-oh, we're going to get, how long can they really ride Urias when he's probably going to start?
He was warming up.
Yeah, you're right. And like, is he going to go, how many innings is he going to go? And then they only had Gonsolin as someone that could go long. I'm like, we'll see. I don't know about that. And then I think the other thing is like, oh, great.
Jesse and Bickford, just to
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
But right, exactly.
But without Manfred baseball, how long could we go 18 innings? That'd be fun. but it was more so is like, well, what bench bats are you really adding? And we saw a little bit of that.
Man. Well, so that was a surprise, right? Like, because for the most part, I mean, this is it over a season. Like over a season, you know, they always tend to carry more pitchers than, you know, I would probably like, or like they err on the side of more pitchers, right? So it was a little bit surprising slash refreshing to see them go the other way. Admittedly, though, it's a one game. They understood it, right? Like, Walker Buehler wasn't active because they weren't going to use him. Tony Gonsolin was because, you know, he was rested enough to where the, if he had to go, I think he would have been more the long guy than Urias. Maybe Urias was like one or two innings tops had he pitched. But like, luckily they don't have to worry about that. So, yeah, so but it was just interesting. But like, so Gratterall, like even when he's on, right, he doesn't really miss bats. But he wasn't good like recently. But he comes in bottom of the order, and I said it when he came in, I'm like, wow, this is a lot of faith in Bruiser Gratterall here. And I think he threw five pitches to four batters. He hit one, but he got three like very very weak grounders and easily got out of the inning. I was like, that okay, worked out perfect, like cool. Like, then they went to they did the Trinan they rode Trinan for they double switched this, so this was another interesting thing, using the position players. They double switched, I think that's when they brought Taylor in, they double switched Pollock out in left
already
field.
Kind of interesting considering how good Pollock's been.
Exactly, but also they're sort of like, they want to protect his hamstring.
Absolutely.
A little bit.
He ran as fast as he could, trying to beat out an infield single that would have scored a run just before that. I understood it, but I was also, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, you're like, oh man, there, the other flashback moment. I think, that was the play. That was the Pollock play where he had that tapper where he swung at a ball clearly outside. But he had the tapper that Molina threw to first, and then Goldschmidt had to reach in like it was the exact carbon copy of the Muncy play from Sunday. But like he got out of the way like soon enough, so that was good. They double switched, so they had tried it for more than an inning. They rode him as far as he could. He struggled a little in that second inning, very briefly. And then, then they got out of the eighth, and then they brought in Kenley for the ninth. It was intense, man. Like, as much as the nervous energy, there were points where the crowd, you could tell it was like, oh boy, this, who knows what's going to happen. But like at times they got like absolutely like intense. Like there were like moments where I don't necessarily think this is true, but it felt like Dodger Stadium was shaking, you know, like, and there was like definitely goosebump moments when Kenley struck out three of the four batters he faced in the ninth. But the last one to like keep it tied, I think before the home run, that was the loudest point of the night. It was kind of amazing. But the 16 position player thing was weird because it became weird. The workout was Tuesday. We talked to Dave Roberts before the workout, so we didn't necessarily see everybody on the field yet. And he was like, yeah, we're thinking about 10 pitchers. I'm like, wow, that's a low number. And then we're like, wait, who are they adding? Because they ended the season with 13 active position players. And in my head, I thought it was 12, but it was 13. But then Muncy is out. We didn't know this the other day. He dislocated his elbow. He said it popped out on the play, popped back in while he was rolling on the ground. There's more damage there. They're still waiting to see what that is. They're not officially ruling him out, but I mean, he's out for October. They don't want to say it yet because it's not official, but it would be a surprise if he plays, I think. So Muncy's out there with like this massive brace on his left arm. I think we're all looked at it. We're like, oh, that looks like something someone wears after surgery, you know, like it was, but like he didn't have that yet or anything, but it was just like, oh man. So that was a tough blow, but so they're only at 12 position players coming from Sunday. So they'd have to add four, and we're like, okay. So you knew like Luke Rayleigh was one, Zach McKinstry, of course, Billy McKinney, because they have an obsession with playing Billy McKinney. And then, you know, like Sheldon Noisy's on the 40 man, but it's impossible. Like Dave Roberts doesn't bury guys, but if someone were to get buried, it's probably Sheldon Noisy. Like just given the earlier in the year, like he didn't really play that well. Then also the if we stretch, we win point. But then Steven Souza Jr. Working out on Tuesday, he ended up getting added as well. So Souza was on a minor league deal. He got called up twice and designated for assignment twice by the Dodgers this year, stuck around, and he got a playoff playoff roster part out of it. Not sure he might continue for the division series, just if they want like a right-handed pinch hit bat, another one. Where it worked out most, like, look, they used Luke Rayleigh pinch hitting in the fifth. That was like, whoa, okay. Because, you know, that was a weird thing. But you sort of get it because, again, it's earlier than they wanted to do it, right? Because obviously you want Scherzer to go deeper. And they want the bigger guys for later. And I think it played out this way because the way they mostly wanted it. So the Cardinals had like one like reliable left-handed reliever, TJ McFarland. So once it's tied in the ninth, you have Kenley Jansen spot first, Billy McKinney second. So they're going to go double pinch hitter there. Everyone's waiting for Albert Pujols, but so they send up Gavin Lux first. That gets the Cardinals to bring in the lefty. And because of the three batter minimum, he has to face three guys. So they burn Lux. They don't even use him, which is like fine. And then
surprised me. I thought
a little bit. Yeah,
I get it matchup wise and all of that, but I still think I liked Lux more in that situation than Souza. So I would have just hit Pujols after Lux.
I'm kind of with you there because at least Pujols was going to get an at bat, right?
Exactly.
Like, and so, but I didn't think they were going to be as aggressive as they were with Souza, but like, that's where they were. So, but I was thinking about this because what if you use Lux earlier? Cause he's probably a better shot than Rayleigh in the fifth. But I think at a point where you're using Lux, it's going to be at a spot either where he's going to stay in the game to play somewhere on defense or, you know, again, they just burned him. But I don't think if you use Lux earlier, I don't think Rayleigh or Zach McKinstry sending up in the ninth is enough to get the Cardinals to bring in a lefty.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So I think they kind of had to do it that way.
And that move almost worked. Pujols hit the tar off the ball.
Well, yeah, exactly. Of course, everyone's like, you know, salivating because it's Pujols against the Cardinals. It's a ninth inning. He hit the crap out of that ball, man. It was like 106 miles an hour. And the Cardinals outfield defense was so good. Harrison Bader, like, he made a hard play look as easy as possible, like, sort of backpedaling to go get that. So that was pretty amazing. And then Souza, like, did – he hit it slightly worse than Pujols, but he still hit it, like, 100 miles an hour, and it was a shot. And then, like, but Bader tracked it down. So there's two outs. And then now all the McCarlin has to do is face another lefty, and that's Bellinger, who singled and walked earlier. He also stole a base. And then he worked the walk. And that was, you know, one of the key plays of the game, obviously. Bellinger – it was the first time – Daniel Brim, I think, pointed this out yesterday. First time he reached base three times since June 11th. That's wild. And then he stole second base again, so he stole two bases in the game. Taylor credited that to helping him being able to, like, shorten his swing a little bit because Chris Taylor was on deck. They brought in a righty to face him, Alex Reyes. And Chris Taylor, he was one of my sort of questions before the series. It's a one game series generally in the playoffs. Will Chris Taylor break out of his slump? Because he's hit under 200. He had a 564 OPS plus or OPS since August 1st. If he had an OPS plus that high, it'd be great. but Dave Roberts on Sunday, he reiterated a little bit of this. I think on Tuesday as well. But he said about Taylor, he's not right mechanically. He is right physically. He had that pinched nerve in his neck. That's mostly fine now. But then Roberts very keenly said, I'm going to bet on him. I believe in him. I think he's a threat when he's in the lineup, so he's going to keep getting opportunities. Now, he wasn't in the lineup on Wednesday, but, you know, it was one of those things very clearly they were going to use him.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And guess what? It worked out. So... fourth walk-off home run in Dodgers postseason history. And now, oh my God, it's Dodgers Giants time. So, yeah.
Whew. So we're going to take a break before we look ahead to that series. But as is tradition, I believe you have a Dodgers Giants-y trivia question for me.
Yep. And one that I might delay the answer on for reasons I'll explain.
No.
Among all the players who have played for both the Dodgers and Giants, which player has appeared in the most total postseason games? Now, this isn't total postseason games for the Dodgers and Giants. It's their total postseason games in their career for a player who happened to play for the Dodgers and Giants.
Okay. I will ponder that maybe for more than the break, but we'll hear an answer at some point after this. So do you want me to take a guess now, or do you want me to wait?
You can take a guess now, and if you're right, I will tell you you're right. But I don't want to tell you just yet, and I'll explain why.
Okay. Man, I'm struggling with it because my mind goes to, well, is there somebody that played for both and played?
It's Jacob Era. I'll tell you that.
Okay.
And active Jacob Era.
So those were two things. It was like either a player that played for both and then like played for the Yankees played in this era where there's just so many more playoff games in general.
I will give you a hint. It's not Jake McGee.
Okay. I'm going to ask one more qualifying question. Is it an active player?
No.
Okay. Man, and if it's Jacob Era, actually, like, Oral was a guess, but if it's going to be later than that, which, again, makes sense, just more playoff games.
I'll give you another hint, because you mentioned Oral. It's very hard for a pitcher to...
Fair. Fair. Yeah, I guess
a lot of games.
Yeah. I guess in my head I was going
a reliever. Yeah, but it's still.
I think I was in my head. It was more on the roster for the playoff game as opposed to making an appearance.
Exactly.
Right, you're actually asking for made an appearance. Oh boy, I don't know. I'll have to. Those Giants teams is it a player that played for the Giants during the teens run?
No.
Oh well. That screwed up that theory. I don't know. I'm excited to find out after we preview the series a little bit. Maybe I'll do some more thinking about it. Yeah. You gave me enough hints that I might be able to get there. But hey, it's Dodgers-Giants in a postseason game.
Yeah, so it's like it's weird because they've been around for like 130 years in the National League, and it's their first postseason matchup ever. But I mean, okay, like that's fine. But it also wasn't technically possible till 1994. Like there weren't even divisions until 1969. So obviously, and the fact that they have the two most famous tiebreaker playoffs, which were three-game playoffs. 1951 and 1962, both won by the Giants. But those technically count as regular season games, so it's a little sketchy to but technically it is first postseason matchup ever. Even though like those 2-3 game playoffs are probably a lot more important or famous than I would say well over half of postseason series, I think. But that said, it's still a rarity and pretty awesome. The Giants and Dodgers have only made the playoffs in the same year 3 times. Again, this was only possible in the wild card era. So since 1994, and 1994 there was no playoffs because of the strike. But yeah, 2014, 2016, and this year were the only 3 times. I wrote this week about. The 2014 seeming like that was a Dodgers-Giants collision course. Dodgers won the division. The Giants were the odd year champions in 2010, 2012. Still had a lot of that team left. Won the wild card. So it was like this could happen. And then the Cardinals were in the way. That was sort of the angle I wrote about. That the Cardinals were in the way again this year, but this year the Dodgers got past them because the Cardinals did not deploy anyone named Matt. They had Matt Carpenter. They did not use him last night, so that was their downfall.
I also want to get a technicality out of the way in that they did play in the 1889 World Series, technically, but not considered a modern era playoff game, which started in 1904. So just before
we it wasn't even in the National League. So right. Get it out of here. It's dead to me. No, you're right. That's good. That's a good call. So all right, we're gonna break down the 1889 series on the next pod, and then but yeah. But just aside from Dodgers Giants, right? That's in itself great because it's a great rivalry. But they're also the two best teams in baseball. They are. It's the first time in the postseason ever in MLB history that two teams with 105 or more wins. Giants won 107. The Dodgers won 106. But with the wild card win, they're both at 107. So it's a race to 110 right now. That's what's going to happen. The matchup. So we know game times for Friday and Saturday in San Francisco. 6:37 Friday, 6:07 on Saturday. Everything is from the National League side is on TBS. Brian Anderson and Ron Darling are on the call. That's who did the wild card game. That crew will also get the NLCS. So if the Dodgers advance against the Braves or Brewers, it'll be that crew. So it's like pretty much a constant thing until the World Series, which is on Fox. Walker Buehler, who was not on the roster for the wild card game because he was going to start game one on Friday. Logan Webb starts for the Giants. Julio Urias, who was warming up and might have pitched in relief on Wednesday in the Walker game, ended up not being used. So he is like sort of free of restrictions on Saturday, game two. That'll also be on 6 days rest for him. So he should be in a pretty good spot. And then Max Scherzer, because he started the Walker game, wouldn't be available till game three Monday in Dodger Stadium. The Giants haven't named their starter, but Susan Slusser reported yesterday of the San Francisco Chronicle, Gabe Kapler, I guess, was saying game three sort of depends on the opponent because this was an interview before the wildcard game. And she sort of surmised that against the Dodgers, they'd be more likely to go with a left-hander. So it could be Alex Wood, old friend alert, on game three Monday. And then where it gets interesting, at least from the Dodgers side and maybe from the Giants side too, game four. Because with Kershaw out, I guess the news on Kershaw since we last recorded, still out for the postseason, confirmed, but no ligament damage, so he doesn't need surgery. Because that was like a huge worry, right? Everyone's like, well, he's probably going to have to get Tommy John or something. Like, that's not going to happen. So that's at least, like, I believe Dave Roberts used the phrase, a huge sigh of relief. And when I tweeted this, I got a lot of assholes to mute because a lot of people seized on that and says, ah, ha, ha, they didn't want Kershaw pitching in October. That's what he meant. Like, yeah, no, that's not what he meant, fuckface.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're just going strong today. We might as well get explicit for the NLDS. But, yeah, fuck all of those people, but they can die. Wow. Anywho, no, I don't mean that. Maybe. Tony Gonsolin, it would be the guy, like, to pitch, you know, the longest, I would say. But it might not even be, like, a start. It could be a thing where they use, like, a lefty, like Justin Brule, if he's on the roster, to start, or David Price or something like that, if he's on the roster. And then Gonsolin for, like 9 to 15 outs, I think. We saw last postseason, although, in fairness to Gonsolin, he wasn't really on much of a regular schedule. So it was a weird postseason for him, but, like, they're not going to use him long at all. Like, he's maybe, like, a one-time through the order, maybe a little longer. So, like, it's almost a true bullpen game, but I think with the division series, at least, you never play more than two days in a row. So you have off days. You can aggressively use your bullpen a little more than usual. So we'll see how that goes. That's going to be the interesting thing here. But, yeah, it's going to be an awesome series. Just two excellent teams who are very evenly matched all year. It was 10-9 in the season series. Obviously, they're a bitter rivals. So I am very, very much looking forward to it.
You know, all my nervousness aside, it'll be objectively really fun. I'm going to be a nervous wreck. Do we want to make a prediction here?
Prediction? Pain. No. prediction. I will mute more people and tell them to fuck off forever, because that's what I did tell one person when I muted them. I said, I'm muting you now. But yeah, anyway, I'm getting way too far afield here. I think the Dodgers are going to win the series. I will, let's say Dodgers in four. That's my prediction.
Okay. I think the Giants should be favored. I think they've proven it's not a fluke. Whatever they're doing.
Wow, involves... Jacob calling for a Giants sweep.
Oh, I'm getting there. Hold on. But because this is a Dodgers podcast and I wouldn't be caught dead predicting an actual Giants win. Dodgers sweep. How about that?
Wow.
Don't need to worry about game four.
You flipped it on me. Oh, yeah. I did not see that coming.
I'm excited. All right. I have one more guess for your for your trivia question, and then I'm bowing out. Mm-hmm. Kenny Lofton.
Oh, God, you got it.
Yes. Nice. I admit, I thought of it. I had to double check that. I'm like, he was a Giant, right? Confirmed it was, and then it was my guess.
More like Dodgers fast forward. That was excellent.
And I'm also glad that I was correct that I'm like, he barely played for the Giants, right? And I was barely
for the Dodgers.
In my heart, he played many games for the Dodgers.
Comparatively, he did.
Yeah, fair.
So Kenny Lofton, his 95 postseason games career is 8th all time. 17 of those were with the Giants. 3 were with the Dodgers because they got swept by the Mets. But this was an amazing. I did not realize this going into this, but so Lofton played 17 years in the majors, mostly known for his time with Cleveland. He had 10 years with the Indians. That was broken up by a stretch where he got traded to Atlanta and then traded back to the Indians. But 10 seasons with the Indians. He played 7 other years with 10 other teams. He was never more than 1 year with any other team. he was traded 3 times in season. That's how he got to those 10 teams in 7 seasons outside of the Indians. He was traded 6 total times in his career. So he was, I mean, for being a, I mean, like if he goes in the Hall of Fame, we'll talk to why he's not or how he's not. He would go in with like an Indians cap because he's very clearly associated with them. But it's amazing. I did not realize how many other teams he played for. And like just how much of a kind of a vagabond he was, even though he was just an excellent, excellent player. He was traded by the White Sox, which I forgot he was on the White Sox, to the Giants at the trade deadline in 2002. He hit .267, .353, .406. That's a 104 OPS plus in 46 games with the Giants. So we talked about relatively small amount of games. he was the leadoff hitter in every postseason game for the Giants that year. They went to the World Series. The Angels won it. You might have heard of this. But so he
that explains. I was wondering, like, how did I know Kenny? And that's why I checked it, because it was just this nugget of he was one of the those outfielders that seemed to just kind of churn through the Giants. And it must have been that World Series that actually made it stuck. But
he also,
go ahead.
He had the walk off hit in the NLCS that won him the pennant. But it was also a game five. So, like, you know.
I'm sure I paid a lot, for whatever reason, paid a lot to that particular. I had a friend who was a big Angels fan. I think for supporting / making fun of him, I watched a lot.
Nice. You're scouting.
But I'm also happy to, you know, look up that, it was only half a season. That's why I did have to double check my work before I made myself completely an idiot.
So he had, in the postseason, 292 with a 350 on base. He scored 16 runs in 17 games. He stole 5 bases, wasn't caught. So pretty much exactly what you'd expect out of a Kenny Lofton in that role. So he signed with the Dodgers in 2006 when Ned Colletti was in his first year as GM. I believe we covered this on a previous Dodgers Rewind. I can't remember if Ned signed 3 or 4 former Giants in that first offseason. But yeah, he's got to bring in his guys. And admittedly, it worked. They won the division. They played very well. Lofton with the Dodgers, 301, 360, 403. He was kind of this hitter for the last half of his career. That was a 95 OPS plus, so just a little below average, but he brought other things to the table. He stole 32 bases.
I also think if, like, your OPS was 95, but you're getting on base above 350, I'm fine with that.
Right. I should have checked, like, his WRC plus. I bet it was higher because of that. But, like, but also this was, he was 39, right? So, like, getting that out of a 39-year-old, perfectly fine, right? He ended the season. I remember this specifically because I was there. He had 599 steals at the end of the year. He stole 1 base in that game 162. This was the Dodgers clinched a playoff spot on Saturday in San Francisco the day before the second to last day of the season. They were battling with the Padres. They ended up finishing the season tied with the Padres, but back then, because there was no wild card game, they just went tiebreaker, and the Padres had the tiebreaker, so the Padres were the division winner. The Dodgers were the wild card. In the third inning against Kevin Correa, Lofton stole third base, but he was caught stealing. He was called out at third. I was aghast from my seat high atop the top row or the top section at the time, was it Pac Bell Park then, or was it AT&T? I don't remember. But there's no way I would have seen exactly if he was safe or not. He seemed safe to me. And so I was outraged because that would have been his 600th stolen base. And then with the Dodgers that year, he was 1-for-13 in the NLDS. But in fairness, almost no one really hit for them that series, I think, outside of maybe James Loney. But just generally, Lofton was so good. He was so fast. I didn't look up before this, but I remember there's a bunch of, like, Nike commercials with him in there and him being really fast. So for his career, 299 hitter, 372 on base, 423 slugging. He wasn't a slugger. Who cares? But, yeah, 107 OPS plus, but did everything well. Excellent defense and center.
And I should
steals.
Be mentioned, scored technically the tying run in the 4+1 game in the 10th inning.
He was the guy on base for Nomar.
Yep, he drew a walk.
So he stole bases at just under 80% clip, 68 career WAR. Jay Jaffe's Jaws has him the 10th best center fielder of all time. Yet on the Hall of Fame ballot, he was a one and done because he only got 3.2% in 2013. That is shameful.
He's on my list of, like, this needs to be in the Hall of Fame. It's like,
absolutely.
The three in my mind, which are, you know, him and Scott Rolen, similar, I think.
Sure, yeah.
And then Buck O'Neill is the other one for different reasons, but all worthy members that Scott Rolen still has another some amount of time on the actual ballot.
Yep.
So he might get there. But
he has that sort of profile of a guy who could sort of build his way up.
Yeah, kind of a Larry Walker-esque climb. Buck O'Neill, I think, will get in through committee this year. But Kenny Lofton might take a while, but I think he'll get there too, and I'm excited for it.
I almost asked my trivia question to you based on this, but I will just note that Lofton also played 4 years of basketball at the University of Arizona. He was the sixth man on the 88 Final Four team. Lofton was a junior. The starting lineup had Steve Kerr, Sean Elliott, and Tom Tolbert, among others, who played in the NBA. I believe that team also had Judd Bushler. But that's not what I'm going to ask you about.
I have a Kenny Lofton. You asked me anything about that.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out a way to ask it where it'd be like, there's no way. Like, so, yeah, unless you're like an avid Steve Kerr fan or something. Like,
he's fine.
Like, what current NBA head coach? Yeah. So, Kenny Lofton in 2006 with the Dodgers hit 12 triples. That was actually fourth in the National League that year. He's one of only two Dodgers with double digit triples in a season in the last 28 years. Who's the other?
Is it Butler?
I will tell you that I had it on a separate thing. So the reason I said 28 years was because Butler did it in 1993 and 1992. But yeah, so there's one other person since then. I will say Butler's the only other one to do it since Willie Davis in 1971. Got so it. They don't have a lot of
so I got it right.
Triple years. You did.
Not really, but for call?
No. Mm. While you said that, I'm going to look up because I wonder what his high was.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'll say Dave Roberts and then tap out.
Oh, man. For Call's first year with the Dodgers, he hit 9 triples.
Dang
so,
it.
Way to
I'm
be
looking back
wrong.
On the tape. I bet there was one. BS, right. Double, and reach.
He got called out at third on a double. Yeah. Just like you're in the stands at San Francisco, and you saw high up. Wait a minute.
I'm going to get asked a trivia question about this 1 year. BS.
Wait, so you said you give up?
I said Dave Roberts and then give up.
Oh, no. Okay, I was going to say Dave Roberts managed him, but he did not. D. Strange Gordon.
Okay.
2014
absolutely.
Hit 12.
Absolutely.
That was his all-star year. Yeah. But yeah, so that's it. So yeah, no one has had more than 12 triples in a season by the Dodgers since Willie Davis, 16 in 1970.
Unreal.
And before that, Jim Gilliam, 1953, 17. So it's hard to hit that many triples in a season.
No
and,
kidding.
There we're at. And that's it for today because we're just doing sort of a shortened playoff stuff. So yeah, get ready for Dodgers Giants. Everyone should be fun, and we will talk to you at some point next week.